Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host and birthday boy this week, Ray. Hey, happy birthday.
Hello.
And of course, Jim is back from an extended absence. How are you, sir? So first of all, good to have you back. So first one we've got to know, how was Charity Hammer?
It was good. It was kind of the middle leg of a very long trip I was on, kind of like a 3 weeks of vacation. So it was just, honestly, the event was really good. I think we just broke around $40,000 in money raised, which is crazy because I think last year we raised $13,000. So to go from, and I think our goal this year was $20,000. So to absolutely smash that goal, I think it felt really good. It was just, honestly, like I think I played maybe a half dozen games, which is more games than I've played in the last 6 months. I think, but more than anything, it was just nice to see everyone. A lot of those people I haven't seen since probably LVO in 2020. So it's been almost like a year and a bit since I'd seen those guys. And it was just nice to kind of catch up with everyone and give people hugs and, I don't know, just hang out with in a Warhammer environment, because I still haven't been to an event. My first tournament I planned to go in about 3 weeks just got canceled due to COVID, so still not be going to any events anytime soon. So that was kind of the very first,
right?
Most likely the last event.
That's terrible. This is actually Health and Mitch's house, or how does he set this up? Because there's like 32 of you guys there. Colin's house, excuse me.
No, that's at Colin's house. So he lives. So Colin lives in about an hour north of Seattle. So it's kind of in between the Seattle and the Canadian border. And it's a small town. So he lives kind of out in the, I don't want to say out in the country, but it's a very small town, kind of suburbia. So he managed to get a fairly nice, he's got a fairly large place with like a, yeah, just enough for some of us. Some of us ended up staying in a hotel. And some of us ended up staying, some of them were local, so they just ended up going home. So not everyone stayed there. It was just mostly the international travelers, which I think there's maybe like a dozen of us. And we just kind of slept on the floor. And because we were doing kind of different games at different times, we managed to kind of rotate.
And of course, the question everyone's asking is, how did you do on the hot sauce challenge?
I made it all the way to the end. There was basically me, Michael Tempe, Peter the Falcon, and one other gentleman whose name is escaping me right now. It was one of those things where we were all, no one was really going to give up. So, we were on this like crazy hot sauce. That was like 6 million scovals. That was it would burn your skin if you got a new skin. So I think we decided, well, the sane ones of us decided, instead of trying to like there was no hotter hot sauce, so we just kept putting more and more hot sauce on the thing that we were eating. We were eating on chips. But we decided to like basically step down because we were worried about people's health. But yeah, I made it to the end. I didn't actually think it was hot, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it'd be. But I think it's actually worse in the show, because like when you're eating it on chips, you can just put the whole chip in your mouth. Whereas in the show, you're eating wings, so you get it all over your face and lips. And I think that's much worse than just eating it like on a chip.
Glad to have you back. And thank you again for participating in that and raising money for a great cause. And
I did very little. I just showed up and ate food and played Warhammer. So most of all the credit has to go to Colin and some of the other guys.
Sounds good. And Ray, you were at an event this weekend as well, kind of an alternative event.
Yeah. They call it an OG. It's not actually based off of the GT packet. It's based on, but still sort of a competitive environment. We've got someone who is part of the ITC events out here to kind of help make sure that it stayed competitive and things didn't get too crazy.
And if I remember, it's got a kind of an alternative list creation rules as well.
Yeah, in that instead of it being, it's run off of power level, and it's a bit of a smaller event. Instead of it being 2,000 points, it's 50 power, which equates to roughly 1,000 points.
So in terms of your list construction, any wild, crazy ideas that were like, wow, I wish I could do this, and then kind of felt restricted by the 1,000 points, or did you just kind of just wing it at this point?
I didn't personally feel in any way restricted. I mean, I certainly knew that since it's about half the army size I'm used to building lists for, that I wasn't going to have. So I had to consider, how am I going to account for that? But I mean, I was playing the new Thousand Sons Codex, and I'm in any way restricted.
That's pretty cool. And if, what was the table size they ended up using?
So at first, the idea was to go with the suggested table size, which is about half the new table size. What's that?
Oh, it's 30 by 44.
Okay, yeah, that's it. And when we actually did the first round, it came up pretty quick that that's actually not a good idea. So after the first round, organizer opted for us to just go up to table size. In this case, actually went up to the 4x6, the old table size, mostly because we don't have mats that are new table size. So have everybody play it at that size and bring out a whole bunch of tape and tape everything up to that size.
Okay. That really would have switched my list around. Because I think one thing I've found with the smaller size, especially with 1,000 points or 50 power level, there is almost no room to come in from reserves. It's really easy to screen out. So for them to switch like that midstream, I would have been like, what? Because I would have built an army that didn't rely on reserves. So, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, well, one of the things we had an issue with is, since it was the Eternal War mission cards, they actually selected four of the different deployments to be chosen at random, and the one that was run for the first run is so there were two different ones that were basically like Dawn of War, with kind of that point in the middle. There was one that both the deployment zones actually touched, and then there's the other one where both the deployment zones were 9 inches away from the center. And that one that was 9 inches away from the center ended up being the one that got drawn for the first run. And there were a fair amount of lists that weren't lists, but because it was that smaller deployment zone, you couldn't necessarily fit all your models on.
Right.
I didn't have any problems, but there was a list, an orc list, that only had 12 models. They were all vehicles. Couldn't quite fit everything on the table at the first turn.
So have to go on reserve.
Because that, that's what happens is when you shrink the table size down to that half size, it drastically shrinks things down from that. Especially if you want to try to keep that point in the middle, what you end up having to do is you have to shrink the sides down. It just ends up being six all because it calls for a 6-inch deployment zone depth on the ends, and it works out to, I think it's like 15 in the middle when you subtract that. So the problem is when you shrink it down, it really ends up, when you subtract the 9, it ends up being 6 because it's, 15 for half. At least that's the way that he had it set up initially. So again, he ended up just saying, look, we're going to keep the deployment zones, let's just go with full size tables. No one had any issues with that. I would say there wasn't any list that I noticed that was what you could consider a slow list. And then I had to laugh because 4,000 Suns players.
There are 4,000 Suns players?
And, yeah. the people playing the 1,000 Suns actually represented an actual single faction.
I'll make note for our next local tournament.
I'd say the next most populous group were people playing Orcs. Part of that was because they were allowing anybody who had the new Orcs Codex to play Codex. Then I saw two Drakari players, a Space Wolf player, two what I'd actually call Vanilla Marine players, and that one was Ultramarines, one was Iron Hands. I believe there was a Blood Angel player. There was a Grey Knight player.
Oh, wow. So gravitating toward the newer codices. Okay, pretty cool. How'd you end up doing?
I went 1-2. So my first game was against the Iron Hands player, which is a local player, Mark Follows, one of the better players. He helps run the events a lot of times, especially. And he was pretty much able to counteract a lot of the stuff that I was able to do with my 1,000 Suns. And I didn't know it, but I guess they've got an ability to basically take feel no pains for mortal wounds. And he did that fairly well. So my biggest problem was that I wasn't really able to take out a unit. I was able to take out models, but not necessarily. I was able to last until the fifth round when he tabled me. But in the end, he beat me in the primary objective, which was called Search and Secure. Basically, what happened is you had six objectives out in the field, and then at the start of each battle round after the first one, a dice would get rolled. And depending on what the roll was, that objective. And if you rolled a dice, that objective was already removed.
It was an older mission. They brought that one back.
You'd get one victory. Yeah. A lot of the open war seemed to be kind of the old style list. You get the victory points at the end of the turn instead of the beginning of the next turn, which made things a little bit easier, especially if you want to try to get points. I can't remember off the top of my head. We didn't use any kind of scoring system that I kept. In fact, all the scoring that we really kept track of was more the tournament points, which were meant for kind of a secondary thing to keep track of. It had to do with ties and or best or
pretty cool.
So I lost the first match. I only ended up getting 2 points in that secondary stuff, which because I was battle ready. Yeah, fun fact. For anybody listening, this was the first tournament I've been to in a very long time where I had a fully painted army, and actually the first tournament I've been to where I actually put stuff on the bases at base. The second round was kind of fun. I played against...
No, so it's a major accomplishment. So second round was against who?
Space Wolf player. The guy's name was... And it was kind of interesting. I never thought I'd actually be considering pulling out one of the stratagem cards to keep hold of that, you know, has to do with Space Wolves. That's one of those ones that you just kind of keep tucked away in the packet and kind of forget that you add. But, so, this time around, we actually work off of just a basic deployment, you know, Dawn of War. This time, the objective's called Incisive Attack. There's only 3 objective markers, basically no man's land. And you roll a dice, and that one becomes the active. So it becomes worth 2 points instead of 1. This was actually a really close game, in that it really came down to him holding that objective one more turn than I did. We actually pointed it out, and if I would have gotten that one turn sooner, then I would have won by 2 points instead of him. As far as the secondary points, which again don't actually have to do with whether you win or lose the match, it's for best of, I actually won there because I was able to take out almost the entirety of his list. And I think part of the reason I did so was because he pushed a little too much to get into assault. So he had Ragnar, a Primaris battle leader, 10 of the assault intercessors. He had the Hounds of Mordkai, which I didn't quite expect to see at any kind of tournament. And then he had two 5-man squads of intercessors with stalkers, which are the heavy. And then he had a 3-man squad of the Primaris Spikers and the Invictor Warsuit. Almost entirely thanks to things like Smite, I was able to take out his Primaris Battle Leader and the Assault Intercessors. And because of the way I did it, I was also able to take out Ragnar in doing so in the same turn I did that. Because in the New Thousand Suns Codex, there is a way to turn your Smite into a flat 3 damage, and you can add on an extra D3 damage. So you can turn a Smite into D3 damage, 3 plus D3 damage. Be pretty useful. Yeah. Especially if you've got the Warlord trait, Warlord that allows you to roll 3 dice to determine what you get. So it's a lot easier to get Super Smite off, too. And when you do that, you don't turn it to a flat 3 damage. That's when you go ahead and go for the full D6. But D6 plus D3 works out to 5.
Very nice. Often. So basic.
Yeah. My third match was against a Craft World list. It was probably one of the weirdest lists I think I've seen. And this was a Warlock, a unit of 6 Warlocks, a 5-man squad of Rangers, a weapon platform with that D weapon, and then 2 fire prisms.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and this one was probably, I think, out of all 3 matches that we played, it was the weirdest objective. This one was called Objective Drop. So you have a objective marker that starts off in the center of the battlefield, and then at the start of each battle round, both players roll off, and the one who wins can move the objective marker 2d6 inches. And then, starting on the third battle round, the player who is within range of it scores 1 victory point at the end of their command phase. And then 2 if they control the objective marker at the end of the battle. And the deployment that we ended up with was the one where both the deployment zones are actually touching right smack in the middle. So, of course, I started off with a 10-man squad of Rubrics right smack in the middle so that I could try to take advantage. Didn't quite work out that way. In fact, the first 3 rounds, he was the one who was able to move the objective. But that actually didn't end up helping him too much because I started off with throwing in a Helldrake pretty far down. I mean, I guess I haven't actually gone over my list yet. Threw Helldrake in, which put a lot of pressure on him. He ended up spending his whole first turn focusing entirely on the Helldrake. And he kept his Fire Prisms about as far away from all the action as possible. He actually had them sitting in his back right, and almost all the action took place in the center, and then it moved a little off towards his left a bit. So I'm able to take out his entire thing of Warlocks, all seven, by turn three, and I kind of just keep certain targets out where he feels pressure to attack, to shoot those, while I'm holding on to the objective, and eventually I'm able to move it away from line of sight of anything of his. Why? Because he did not move his Fire Prisms until the fifth round, when it didn't even matter.
Okay.
And by the fourth round, that's all he had. So he's sitting there, just sitting in the corner, firing everything. I don't know if he was hoping that he could table or what, but so I just kind of okay, well, I mean, I've taken control of this, so all I need to make sure is that he doesn't actually wipe out anything that's holding the objective. So that ended up being my most sound.
Well, all right. So now you've had a test spin with it. Jim, have you had a chance to look at the Thousand Suns Codex?
Yeah, I've played a few games with them, sorry. They're pretty fun. They're kind of nasty if you don't have the right tools to deal with them. I actually played my final league game against a Salamanders list that was tooled to basically all the anti-psychic janks. So he had a 5++ litany for the 5++ Film and Pain against mortals. He had a relic that gave his character a 4++ relic against mortals. And it's just so much smites, it just didn't really matter. I was just doing sometimes upwards of 18 to 20 mortal wounds. And it's even with that, it's just and if you don't take any other psychic, it's kind of there's so much psychic that even taking us, you can't really take a psyker to stop it. One psyker doesn't really do much, because most psykers only have one deny. So you're actually kind of better off just there's really no good way to, I guess, defend against it, because unless you're playing the mirror, and even in that case, you're still 2-1 cast to denies. And with the Cabal points, the +1 to cast, things like the Athenian scrolls, and your rerolls, you're actually casting at an incredibly high rate. I think I failed maybe one spell the entire game. Especially if you're smart about how you do it. So I think it's a good book. The one issue being that everything's just really a point expensive. So you don't have a lot on the table, which means if you're not smart and you lose, a unit or two, or you let a unit out, die quickly, it doesn't, the army doesn't actually trade that well, because there's not a lot to trade. So I think, against certain lists, you really got to be careful not to, I guess, overcommit. And it is, you got to play much more slow and steady game. But I ended up I think tabling him on turn four, in my game. I saw him as opponent. He had, I think, maybe one squad out of Marines on a back objective left, but I was picking up basically 20 to 25 mortal wounds a turn. And then obviously that's just your psychic, so you still have a shooting phase that's fairly strong with all your demon engines and stuff. So it's pretty happy with the book so far. I have maybe an RTT coming up this Saturday. I don't know if I'm going to make it, but I'm currently assembling some more Rook Marines. But I think the thing with the book, and I think this is a lot of people are going to make this mistake, is over-investing in things like characters and rubrics. I think you really need to diversify what's in your list, because if you do end up hitting an opponent that has is built to kind of beat you, you're going to be in a world of hurt if you don't have enough other elements. So Ray had mentioned that, I don't know how much shooting he had, but it's important to be able to take out stuff outside of the psychic phase as well. So
now, both of you know, Ray, you mentioned you had a Helldrake in the list. Jim, you posted on Instagram that you've got a Helldrake on your desk that you're working on. Is that kind of the secret sauce to for that early alpha strike for Thousand Suns?
My personal opinion on the Helldrake is no. I actually think there's two things in the book that I think seem very tempting on paper, but I think are a bit of a trap, and I think people need to be really careful about them. The first is the Helldrake, which, and what I mean by that is, it is a good unit, but there's this temptation to just launch it up into the opponent to be, you know, as I mentioned, a distraction Carnifex. The problem is like the army is so slow otherwise that it's, you're not going to have other threats in the army. So a smart opponent, if you do throw up that Helldrake, will just kill the Helldrake and then not have to, you don't have to, there's not enough target saturation where they're going to be worried about other things. So they're just going to be able to kill the Helldrake and then move on to like the next thing without really kind of having to force them into a choice. And that kind of is also why I think Cult of Duplicity, there's like obviously the famous rubric trick with, you know, four deploying the rubrics and then you got like a big 10-man rubric squad up in the middle of nowhere and people have to deal with it. I think that's a good strategy, but the problem with that, and again, it kind of goes to the same thing, is you're spending 2 CP just to forward deploy them. You're spending a warlord trait to be able to redeploy them potentially if you don't go first. And so in missions where you don't go first, you've essentially wasted 2 CP and a warlord trait potentially. So it's like there's a big investment. And then even in those games where you do go first, you know, you have a 10-man rubric squad up in their face. Okay, that's great, but that's, you're looking at upwards of 200 points, right? And most opponents will just kill that in one turn because you're not going to have other elements to threaten. So I think if you're going to, I think you got to be really careful not to, like if you're going to play that kind of forward aggressive game, Thousand Sons, you really need to go all in with like Helldrake, maybe two Helldrakes, you know, the Cult of Time stuff, some Zangors or whatever else that you're going to, you know, Dark Matter Crystal up there. Like you can't just have this one trick thing where you like throw it up there and you hope that you go first. Like you really gotta be smart about how you expend your resources, because as I said, you don't have a lot on the table, and losing a 160 to 100, 200 point unit for very little in return turn one is just not, I don't think, is a good way to play the game, the army. So I think that's something that Thousands of Spurs into really.
Ray, how did the Helldrake work for you in this week?
Yeah, so, the Helldrake worked out pretty well. And I think part of that had to do with the fact that it was a, you know, it's a different format than ITC. It's, you know, everybody's got smaller lists. It's all working off power level. And especially with it having, all, you know, it having aircraft has, you know, it's got the minus one to hit. It can move much. I did have some unfortunate rolls when it came to using the Bale Flame, but more and more, It was a heavy hitter in both the games. I was able to do something in my first round again. I was playing Iron Hands, and a lot of those feel no pain style rolls made it harder. But up against the Space Wolves, it took out, I want to say it actually took out both squads of the Intercessors one after the other. Pretty handled. It's very helpful that it has a damage 2 flame. And even in the game where it did the least work in that first round. While it, unfortunately, you know, it didn't take out any models, what it did do is make, I mean, almost none of my other models were even hit with attacks. In fact, he didn't start shooting my rubrics until after the Carnifex was, for the most part, taken care of, with the exception of the occasional last cannon right. gun. Not. And I ran Cult of Time, so, if, you know, if I lose a model here or there, I'll just use a psychic power to bring the model back.
Cool. Yeah, I think you hit it with kind of echoes both things. In the smaller format, the Helldrake could work, but if you're going to move forward, like Jim said, into a 2,000 points, you probably need at least two of them, maybe three, and then something else to support Skull in. So, okay.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I like about seeing a tournament where it's not the run-of-the-mill 2,000-point grand tournament-style tournament, because, you know, you can't go off the list and just say, okay, I'll cut it in half and you're good to go. You know, there's going to be little intricacies where, you know, someone who's got a list that may not necessarily do so well, even though he's got more models, he may have the edge when it comes to that smaller game.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models. And when you order, they come fast. The order is right. And for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com. And when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
All right. So last little bit here. We are, as of we're recording right now, we're about 48 hours away from Warhammer Plus. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to take a look at the preview over the weekend with the Hammer and Bolter episode or any other thoughts as to what's going to be released on Wednesday. It's not. It was a 24-hour thing. So on and off. And Ray, did you have a chance to take a look at it? Okay, great topic on my part. I did see it, and it's kind of tough. You know, it's one of those things where, was it cool? Yeah, it was pretty neat. If it had come out 2 years ago, I'd be like, oh my God, that's so awesome. I think what makes it hard was the 2 days prior to that was the latest episode of What If from Disney Plus. Now, granted, they've got a bigger budget, bigger, animation studios, and it just, wow. You know, it was a very different style, but it was pretty cool. It was basically the story of Commissioner Yarik as told by the orcs. So it had a lot of orc humor in it. And some of it was a little on the goofy side, but a lot of it was consistent with the lore. And it was also kind of funny seeing the Battle of Armageddon, which was what, fifth edition when that came out. Yeah, and they somehow incorporated some of the new buggies from the latest Orc Codex into the footage. I was like, hey, wait a minute, that model hadn't been out yet. So that part was pretty cool. So, yeah, it's kind of neat. And so I'll be curious to see what the other ones... I definitely liked Angels of Death better. So we'll see what that has to offer, as well as the other shows. And we're supposed to see new episodes every Wednesday. So I'm a little excited about this. So we'll see what happens. Until then, I will wait with bated breath.
Do we know was Hammer and Bolter one of the shows that was produced by Games Workshop, or is it one of the shows that was produced by one of the...
I want to say it's one of the animators they brought in house, and it's the anthology show. So each episode is sort of a standalone story, so they can cover a wider berth of storylines and multiple races.
That's cool, I guess. I mean, I'll be interested to see what kind of original content Games Workshop comes out with, and if it's going to feel like it's produced at a higher quality than the...
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. Again, it's a lot of waiting here. So we got another 48 hours, and we'll finally get to see, put our eyes on it, and give a full review. So pretty excited, but cautiously optimistic at the same time. So, cool. All right. So beyond the two events we did, the Charity Hammer as well as Ray's event, there were a few other events this weekend and throughout the world here. Ray, do you happen to have the events from this past weekend? All right, yes, where are we heading first?
The first one I found was the Gateway OGT.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the top five there.
In fifth place was Dick Johnson playing Ultramar. Sam Henley playing Death Guard. Third, Jeremy Stan, the Adeptus Custodes. Second, Scott Sasser playing Death Guard. And first, Matt playing Drukhari.
Another familiar name making his way through the top. Curious he's playing Drukhari, though, especially with orcs right around the corner. But, okay, I guess it goes with what's strong. What's our second list? Our second event of the weekend. Ray, you still there? Now we can. There we go.
What happened?
So what's our next event from the weekend?
So Battleground 40K GT.
That one I don't know. Where was that?
Battleground. It's Battlegrounds to Board Games.
Oh, okay. So what's our top five list?
In fifth place, Joshua Minich playing Chaos Demon. Fourth was Nathan Adeptus Custodes. Third, Dallas Bolyard playing Cult Mechanicus. Second, Gilberto Rivera playing Space Wolves. And first, Sam Dayton playing Space Wolves.
Space Wolves taking the top spot. What's up with that? All right. Where do we go to next for our third event?
Next up is the Iowa Open.
Guessing that's in the Midwest.
And fifth place was Kyle McCord playing Imperium. Fourth, Jasper Axelson playing Ultramarines. Third, Breton Rixroat playing Dark Angels. Second, James Keeling, Kari. And in first, Charlie Andre
and Charlie's itching to get back in the ITC top 10. He dropped out the last 2 weeks. He's still hanging in the low teens there, 13th, 14th place. So we'll see if that will be able to get him into the top 10 once again. And by the way, we pronounced it wrong. It's not the Iowa Open. It's Iowaug Open. So, you know, the little orc theme there. What's our next event, Ray?
The IWTS Open.
Do we have any idea what that stands for?
And
all right.
Not a, we had Justin Siner Delorme plays with Death Guard. Fourth, Jason Wells playing third, Brendan Krusty playing Death Guard. Second, John playing Space Wolves. And in first, Anthony
Woodcray back on top. Playing nice to see that. All right. Our next event.
The last of the summer wine hammer.
This sounds like a upscale beer hammer event. Okay. What's our top five look like there?
All right, in fifth place, Lewis Morville with Adeptus Sororitas. Fourth place, Adam Lane playing Skitarii. In third, Torpedo Jones with Eldari. In second, Mark Crumbleholm playing Drukhari. And in first, Matt Robertson.
Wow, another win for Matt Robertson. All right. So, English guys are getting their events in. Nice to see that. Where do we go next?
The WG Open Summer Slaughter. And in fifth place, Matt Reed with Deathwatch. In fourth, Boris Michiev playing Drukhari. In third, Andrew Bourbon playing Imperium. In second, Raphael Harbinson playing White Scars. And in first, Manny Chima.
Another change Orcs. In faction again. It's interesting. Jim, Manny seems to be the meta chaser extraordinaire. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, good for him. He's a competitive guy.
It's amazing that he's... He's always switching around. I'm like, wow, okay. Well, if he can paint them that fast, good for him. So, cool. Ray, any other events this weekend?
Yeah, there was one other one I saw, which was listed as the GT Grenada War Lotus.
It's an interesting name.
In fifth place was Manu Perea with Orcs. In fourth, Paco Malero playing Drukhari. In third, Kamini Rodriguez playing Salamanders. In second, Salon RS playing Ultramarines. And in first, Antonio Mann playing right. Iron Hands.
Iron Hands makes another trip to the top. All right, so how that affects your ITC top 10. So as of this is Monday night, seeing how they shake out, there's been quite a bit of movement in the ITC top 10. 10th place, slipping one more spot, Nick Nadavati still hanging on to that 10th spot. Johnny Veliquez. In ninth, James Keeling, who we mentioned earlier this week and came in second, holds on to the eighth spot. Ben Sherwin holds on to number seven. Colin McDade gets pushed down a little bit to sixth place by number five, Charlie Andre. As you mentioned, he won the event that he attended this particular weekend. Top four, though, pretty much stays unchanged. Mark Hurdle in fourth, Brad Chester in third, Sean Dayton in second, and John Lennon in first. For more coverage on our top 10, check out our Facebook page. It's been a popular post every week as we break down some statistics on individual players. And we've got a couple new things coming out in the next few weeks, so keep checking that out. Jim, what do you got going on your podcast this week?
I have no idea. I haven't.
It's an entire week of improv. You must tune in. You know it's going to be good.
Yeah, I literally had a busy weekend. And okay. I don't know.
Right. Any return of your solo cast coming back anytime soon?
Yeah. Because I'm probably going to talk a bit more in depth about kind of G and probably talk a bit about my going through the Codex and trying to figure out what I'm going to do as far as when I actually game.
That should be a good listen. And just a reminder, Akatiu Onslaught tickets are on sale. And we had a huge uptick in ticket sales this past weekend. So thank you all who are buying tickets. They are available through the PCP app. You can buy them through that. The event is November 6th and 7th at the Glendale Civic Center here in Glendale, Arizona. So we are, as of now, we are still in our configuration that is COVID safe. So with 6 foot separations between each table. So, and we'll maintain that until further notice at this point. So we look like we will still be on as the numbers continue to increase a little bit here in our local area. But we'll keep you updated if that does change. But in the meantime, look forward to seeing all of you there. Any parting thoughts, gentlemen, before we close up? All right, then. So once again, thank you for listening to the Exterminator Podcast. My name's Eric. I want to talk to you guys next week.
I'm Jim.